Into the Nexus is a production of amove.tv. Bookmark Amove TV for other great video games and esports podcasts. Into the Nexus is sponsored by listeners like you via patreon.com/ITN. Greetings and welcome back, everyone. This is Into the Nexus, the podcast all about Heroes of the Storm. I'm Garrett Weinzierl, here as always with Kyle Ferguson, and rejoining us, our lovely, lovely guest, Bahamut. Welcome back, dude.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time, man. CCL is imminent.
It is here. We're at the doorstep of season two, legitimately. It's not like there's more stuff to do. It's just games are starting this weekend.
That sounded truthful. Like there's no more stuff to do. Not that I'm like trying to like make you panic or something. There's nothing in the back of your mind. Like, oh, I got one more planning document I got to put together. And
no. I mean, that's Jules is literally, she handles everything and she's had the week off. She's just sitting and drinking mimosas and just relaxing. No, I mean, there's a lot of stuff for us to do. We had like a tech rehearsal this morning. I know there's a dress rehearsal for casters tomorrow. So we still have a little bit of things, but like, it's here, like the season's starting, and I'm ready to go. I'm ready for Saturday morning.
That's good. It sounds like you're truly like off the chain lift for roller coaster terminology. Like it's just been going up and up.
Oh, absolutely.
And, mm-hmm. Yeah, you have left. So that's great to hear, man. It's like I can feel the relief and energy in your voice.
It's a long time coming. Like, I actually brought this up during the draft show, but Jules and I had talked right before that. She had started for season two draft show, the planning and all of the coordination for all of that started in November of last year. So it's definitely not like, oh yeah, we put it together like the month of draft show. Like, it's been months of work.
Yeah. I feel like you watch it. It's you should be able to tell. Like y'all's production is very well put together. You had a very impressive season one. So to me, I'm not sitting around wondering why the community as a mm-hmm. whole is looking forward to season two, because season one went off really well.
Yeah, go ahead, please, Kyle.
I don't want to spoil any of the magic, you know, the behind the scenes, the secret tunnels under Disney World so the characters can get around. But does someone panic type every single character and player that's drafted, or does someone actually make a PNG image of every possible draft pick and have that in a folder that they then panic, drag over and drop in the production?
So if you want the curtain reveal, if you will, or just like a little peek of what we actually do. When it comes to the actual draft show itself, we have multiple channels. We have a channel where there's all the orgs hanging. We have like an on deck channel. And then we have our live, the caster channel. And so what happens is the admins, because bless the admins who do a lot of the legwork, they actually already know the draft pick, probably one pick ahead of what you currently see on stream. So we constantly in the background already know, and it's just the casters who we don't look at the one document because then that throws things off for us. But, They just come in, and by the time the person announces their draft pick, production on the other end has already put in the name, has graphics ready to fly, and it's all based off of when the org announces it. So there's a lot in the background, and our production staff absolutely kills it. It's one of our toughest shows, but it's one of the most rewarding shows in the end.
Damn. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You have to get Photoshop to export in time. Mm-hmm.
What? Yeah, that's impressive. I love hearing about this kind of stuff, by the way. We were talking a little bit before we hit record mm-hmm. about the various programs that go in, and you'd mentioned something about what you use the stream versus and it works in conjunction with the second program. Yeah. And I was jokingly/truthfully going, oh, if there's two programs involved, I'm not interested. And you're like, well, one of them's really just for the graphics guys. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool. I never really mm-hmm. like, of course it's there. It's very obvious that there are graphics on display, but you don't really think about it and think about the fact that there are people behind that making it happen and hitting their cues.
There's a whole production room that like I'll hear in every so often because Joseph, our main producer for CCL, he's in my earphones all the time saying, all right, you know, we're going to go to, you know, this roster card or we're going to be jumping into draft now. So he kind of drives the show a little bit, letting me know where we're going every single time we kind of have a transition. And every so often, you know, he will, because he's in two Discord channels, he'll forget to mute his caster mic. So I'll hear him saying like, all right, Chenzi, fly this graphic and drop this graphic. So we hear every so often a little bit of the background, and it's not chaos, but there's a lot of just chaotic control, if that makes sense. There's a lot going on, but it's super, super well defined as who has what role and who has to do what at that exact moment in the show. Really, really cool in the background.
Well, mad respect to the production staff because they're doing good work. It looks phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And I just get excited hearing about that kind of stuff. So
I got tons of stories. Yeah,
we'll bring it back just to do a one-off where we do is talk about microphones.
I love it. Yeah, we'll have a microphone, we'll have like a tech podcast spinoff.
Sounds good. Sounds like a plan. But anyways, before we get into the nitty-gritty of today's episode, which will be primarily CCL focused, I have a feeling we're gonna drop some hot takes about certain heroes that we may or may not like playing, facing, etc. We want to thank those of you, though, supporting us over at patreon.com/ITN, because you are the ones that drive this podcast, that drive this show, that keep the lights on, help us pay the bills, help us pay ourselves, and help us pay our guests. We do pay our guests for their time, and that's because of the level of the support of the folks over at patreon.com/ITN. So thank you so much for the support, everybody. And a big thanks to, familiar name here, Tom Peace, our latest patron.
Yeah, the very man that killed me on that diva that we talked about last week. And also taught you and I knew Sonya tips. And I took Sonya to my very first NGS game this week and I won it. And when it was over, Cavalier guest said it was fine. And that's pretty darn good.
Question.
High accolade?
For you. Leap or Wrath?
It was Leap.
Bless. Okay, good.
I have no idea how to play Wrath. I have no idea how to spin to win. Anybody who hook shots in and then immediately starts spinning, I can date you as 2017 right there. I know who you are. You've been on this era forever. I do the leap, aim the spear while you're stunned so I don't miss sort of thing, and that's a dead gray main, and that's all I need. Plus, I've gotten pretty good at the whole, like, I'm going to change my angle while I'm hitting Garrosh so it bounces in the back line sort of thing. It's real. It's a bit too much, but I'm very proud of myself.
Doesn't it feel satisfying, man? It feels so big brain when you're great. Like, I'm just going to adjust the angle just a little bit and it lands on the vagina. Yeah. And you're just like, ooh, that feels good.
Mm-hmm. Or you're fighting Asmodan, so you're slamming the lane instead of him, knowing it deals more damage come level 4. Oh, yeah. It's a good time.
I was doing that to a Tychus the other night who decided to lane against me on Hanamura. I was just like, all right, buddy, I'm just going to smack the lane.
I don't know. I love Tychus. I love playing him. But my poor Urel, and I love killing Sonyas on Tychus. So I do not look forward to that eventual matchup someday.
Anyways, folks, check out patreon.com/ITN, get access to our Discord, ad-free version of the show, and other perks like signing up for our monthly game nights. But we're going to get into this week's Heroes of Storm news and talk some CCL.
We're on, boys! Let's liven up this place!
The moment is upon us.
Yes, I'd mana tap that.
All right, let's just get into it, and I guess we'll start with the Season 2 draft of CCL. Yeah.
So, it's a good place to start.
Yeah, we've got some teams disbanded. We've got Crowd Control and Sidestep Kings.
But in their place came Onyx and Storm Esports, which were very into the draft, which is probably the coolest thing about them. Like, particularly, what was it, Christopher Kraft on Onyx was so geeky about this entire opportunity. And even comparing that to Season 1, where it felt like teams were just kind of being placed together, this got really deep, and even the new orgs were pretty in the know about which players did what.
I got to give credit where credit's due. Both of the new orgs that came in, Storm Esports and Onyx, they did their homework. Like, they came in, and they've had previous experience. I believe both organizations had experience within Rocket League and CSGO. I want to say, I'm misremembering, so I'm actually not going to bring up the fact. One of the two has like a top CSGO team, and I feel like it's Onyx, actually. So they all have experience in the background for building a roster and understanding how team management works. But, you know, coming into Heroes of the Storm, it's a MOBA. We're not FPS. We're not Rocket League. And they do have experience in all this. But they dove in like head first, no arms to break the water, just literally just in it. And they were so into the drafts constantly. And like, I know Chris from Onyx was constantly interviewing players. I know Storm was watching every single scrim they could. So these two new organizations that came in, they blew us all away on the admin side, because we were seeing how involved and how excited they were to be able to have this draft and, you know, kind of pick and put together this team. Well put together as well from both of these sides as well when it comes to their drafts.
So tell me a little bit about the system of the draft here, because previously there was a season one where people made teams, and then there was trading that went on in there, and eventually teams sort of settled into a style. But come season two, you weren't allowed to keep your whole team.
Correct. So going into season two, CCL implemented the rule that you would have to drop at least two players from your roster. The reason we did this, it was to breathe life into the grassroots scene that we're building. I mean, this is the community Clash League. So by doing this, yes, we recognize that players are forced off of their teams, and that is unfortunate. We do understand that there's that aspect, and it sucks. It sucks in general. It's an easy way to put it. But at the same time, we create this path to pro. We have these opportunities for new players to come in to breathe life into what could be stagnant rosters or rosters who are not looking at the game differently. There are constantly new and rising players in Heroes of the Storm, and that is the opportunity we want to create through Community Clash League in this season two and then onwards. So I personally love this because, as I said, it breathes life and it gives opportunities. It's much like when we go back to CCL, but HGC, there was the open division. I mean, instead of dropping one or two players from your roster, we're dropping one or two entire teams from HGC, and they have the potential to get replaced by someone who's rising up through the community. A good example is, well, HHE that came through with McIntyre and Crow, and they went through the open division and they had a wonderful run in their time in the HGC. And that's the idea that was behind all this, is to create a path to pro for the community and have this be what we call it, the Community Clash League.
I like it too, because there is an inherent challenge, right, with having that kind of churn and that path, as you're mentioning, with something that's a team-based game. It's something we're more used to seeing in a kind of a single player 1v1 environment where players rise and fall naturally. But when you have these locked in rosters, when you have a team of five, how do you mix it up? And so, yeah, I'm with you. And like, I understand the concerns from like players that may not want to leave their team, but as a viewer, I'm all here for it. I'm like, yeah, well, every team's in the same boat. Every team has to potentially contend with this situation. So bring it on.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's a great way to keep things fresh and shooken up within CCL. And it's exciting to see what it's done for season two already. I mean, our rosters, which I know we'll get into at some point, they're a little terrifying this season. There's a lot of really good players and some, what you could say, stacked rosters as well.
Well, not only that, but they have personalities to them. Now that the protected players stuck around and defined how they want to play, and we're seen playing, they want to, you know, the way they want to play, dive teams or more double supporty sort of styles, then they brought in other people to fill that out. But it is interesting what Garrett said there about the solo things, like StarCraft. You know, the MLGs back in the day, everyone would show up. If you were the best of the best of the best, or happened to be just a complete surprise, you'd make it on stage by the end of the day. That would become a thing. Now you're a pro. And that forcing of the drop also means that everybody gets to show off their hunger. And there was a lot of hunger in those free agent players. They wanted in.
Well, you just mentioned double support, Kyle. So to Kyle and Muhammad, I ask you, what was with the priority on supports in the early draft?
Me personally, my two cents on it. A lot of the core of a roster is actually around your support and understanding how to be able to heal your teammates. There's the meme that's floating around with BBJ and Lobber, like, oh, now the Lobber has someone to die as much with him like BBJ. But understanding your teammates, I think, is a big factor. And some of the support priority, I think, is because these support players that have been in the community and as we were saying, kind of like grinding their way up and showcasing all their skill, I think they really showcased how well they can keep a team alive in some of these big drawn out team fights, or even showcasing the, what you're just bringing up, double support factor, because that is kind of working its way back in. Uther, Ana, or even just our Lilies that are paired in with some of these other Karazims as well. There's a lot of double support stuff, and I think you do have a point with there being the possibility of having that two healers, but also there was, I actually misspoke during the draft day, X-Ray was listed as support and everything or healer, and they're actually moving into main tank, and they're an insanely vocal person. So that's the other factor too, is I think a lot of the supports that we're seeing drafted are also very vocal support players that can influence a lot of the team fights.
So when you say vocal, you mean like they're a part of the shot calling process?
Yeah, they're an in-game leader is like we like to define it. They're not saying exactly what needs to happen for every single team fight, but they are definitely leading the pacing of the team fight in the sense of how much they have in cooldown or what they're able to actually output in healing.
I like that. I'm not that I'm even close to a competitive player, but coordinate environment experience that I do have.
Yeah.
I struggle to think of any example of the support telling us if something is a good idea or not, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about the role that a support fills in a Heroes of the Storm composition.
You have your tank as your leader. So like, let's use the example of X-Ray continued because he was a support player in the last season. Let's put them with like Lobber as the main tank. Lobber's going to be in the front leading the charge saying, hey, we're doing this and that. But there's always that backline. There's always those people in the back who are going to get maybe dove by the Valyra, or there's a portal from Medivh that gets that, you know, they all of a sudden are on top of this Malfurion. People like X-Ray, for example, who are these loud, you know, support players, those are the ones that can kind of then be like, hey, I need assistance, or things are happening. A lot of the time when I've actually jumped into some comms, when the support gets dove, it's just, I'm dead. And that's the team fight.
It is worth noting, and the chat has brought it up, that yes, we are entirely calling this support. And again, oh, yes, it's Blizzard's fault for calling this healer. Yeah, it's on the website as support. It's on Liquipedia as support. Like, we know, but it is worth saying, like, this, we're not going to have some sort of explosion of Zarya's about to happen. Though, of course, there'll always be the threat of Medivh.
I was about to say, we're living in the permanence of Medivh, whether it's perma-banned or whatever, but... whatever. We're old. I've been doing this since 2014. Blizzard ain't changing the game with patches. I'm not learning new shit.
I mean, it's still a bad habit of myself. I do it on my own stream. I say support, I mean healer. So it's just one of those things that, because it's in every other MOBA as well. I believe
you can call us Heroes Boomers. It's okay. You can call us Heroes Boomers.
I'm right there with you, though. That's the thing. But I think the title, I think it stems from other MOBAs as well. And I watch like a lot of League, and I believe they call it support in that game, as well as Dota 2, it's support as well. So it's just one of those things that, you know, Blizzard was like, hey, we want to be very unique. And it's like, well, add another multi-class here or something.
We got this U, it ends with utility. Like, let's go that direction. But, you know, enough on that. the other big thing I kind of took away as an overarching idea from the draft is just how valuable bruisers are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're off in their own world solo laning, but it's not like the HGC days and that had to be like a trusted, solid, gonna be willing to hide,
right,
almost boring individual. These are now playmaking bruisers, rotating bruisers, double bruisers with that double support.
Oh God. I mean, we're basically in, if you will, just to make chat more angry, we're technically in triple bruiser hyper carry sort of meta right now. And by triple bruiser, I mean like there's a main tank and then like a Hogger, Sonya, Ana, and then a Vala or something like that, or like a Jaina or a Li Ming, or, you know, there's that hyper carry. So we're kind of in this like mega frontline hyper carry meta as well, that's starting to form. And I think having that priority onto bruisers is really playing into that. But also, bruisers have become a bit of a ward. They have, as you were mentioning, the rotations on the map, and they can kind of jump into team fights, making a 4v4 or 4v5. Towers of Doom's a great example of that, or even Dragonshire. But I feel like the solo lane, while it sits there and just kind of watches the map, it also does give information to a lot of players, and they're kind of, as I said, that ward, saying like, all right, some camps are up, and I'm locked into this lane, I'm watching minimap, because you PvE for a lot of the time in that lane. There's not a whole lot that goes on outside of not stepping too far forward and not getting dove and blah, blah, blah.
I mean, seeing something like the pick rate on Johanna makes me wonder if we need to do something about it as an overarching game balance kind of position. Because if you're looking at your draft and you say, okay, we have super duper carry, no lane clear. We've got double support, struggles to lane clear. We are now going to make up for this with two bruisers or Johanna. Those are like our options.
Are you focusing on Johanna just so we don't spend another week talking about the overpower of Sonya?
A little bit. A little bit, right? Like, it is perhaps detrimental that we have not only very powerful and damage-wise and lane-clear-wise Sonya Hogger, but then you've got Leap and Hortipult, which are escapes. And now our bruisers are doing the warding. It's dangerous for ETC to even exist in tournament play?
That's very true. I've ETC is hard fallen off with the current meta as well. And you actually made a perfect point right there, Kyle, because it was brought up in my chat yesterday by someone. And I was bringing up like diving onto bruisers, how difficult it can be because their mobility, their escape, like Leoric, for example, with Wraithwalk, or as you were mentioning, Hogger with Hortipult or Leap from Sonya. Someone actually in my chat said, killing like Malfeo, for example, is like trying to nail Jello to a wall. And I think that's the perfect analogy of trying to kill some of the bruisers these days. Like there's too much in them. And how do you kind of tone that down? That's for a developer to know a little bit better than me. But like, it's just, it is this weird spot to be. And I think that's where we're also seeing a lot more of this heavy bruiser composition with like a Johanna or a Garrosh or something like that, because that offers that little bit of mobility that they might need before they hit that 10 talent tier. You bring up a really interesting point, because it was the same conversation I had yesterday, and I wonder if we see any sort of dial back into our bruiser meta, or if it's going to be full force into it going into season two of CCL.
Yeah, no, this is a bit of a side comment, but sure, this is merely the guy who spent way too much time learning Hogger and now is doing Sonya. There is a bizarre disconnect in our brains where Hogger goes flying away with Hortipult, 60-second cooldown, and we all go, oh, jeez. Hogger is broken. What a butt. How dare he? But we see Sonya leap away and we're all like, ah, gotcha, Sonya. Leaps on cooldown.
It's true.
And
it's true.
Stoked on this same exact cooldown with less range.
Well, hold on. Because a leap that lands where it's supposed to land does its job 100% of the time. A Hortipult that lands where it's supposed to land, you still have to make art on the other end of that landing, like fair. As a Hogger. That's okay, true. Like I'm doing it. I'm a Sonya like one trick nowadays, and I'm gonna say yeah, Sonya probably messed up. I still think Sonya kind of messed up. If you got a leap to survive.
I know for the majority of players, I'm like, wow, congrats on discovering a beta 2014 hero, Kyle. Like, let's talk about it some. But the fact that Sonya doesn't decay her fury just makes Hogger mains, well, furious.
Now I'm just going to say, no, F that. Hogger's good enough.
Update her to modern mechanics. You talked about the carry.
Yeah.
And my biggest fear when I hear double support or even double bruiser, because I'm starting to think, oh no, who's dealing all the damage, is we return to something that, you know, HGC is romanticized.
Right.
But we forget about Greymane Vala. Mm-hmm. Every game, Greymane Vala, Greymane versus Vala, Greymane versus Vala, and they switch sides sometimes. Now we have Cassia, but is there anyone else you feel will maintain that unique energy, and do we need more ranged assassins that can be elevated or created to that role?
Do we need more ranged assassins in Heroes of the Storm? Probably not. Would I like more StarCraft heroes just in general? Yes. Bring Overmind Blizzard, realistically. But I think it's one of those things that, like, it's if we can kind of actually circle back slightly to Sonya, it's a lot of like what meta exists currently is what is the most popular thing and only played. So I think in season two of CCL, we might actually see a revitalization or a revisit to the meta currently. Cause you are right. Like in a lot of the games that I'm casting, it's very stagnant with, you know, high priority onto the Cassia. You've got Hogger solo lane or Sonya or D.Va. Like it's very, very stagnant in that. And I wonder as we get into the season, do we start to see a little bit of a split off? Does Oxygen come in and bring out, you know, a crazy mind controlled Sylvanas sort of deal? Because if you go back before season one of CCL, there was no mind control Sylvanas. If you picked that, you were going to get laughed at. But after, you know, we see more competitive play at a higher tier, these teams start to innovate a little bit. And so I agree with you that the meta right now is very stagnant with what's prioritized. But I feel like the innovation should come through the season from these teams, and we should start to break away from that. I mean, look at this as well. Monstrosity Abathur. How often do you think that was ever played before season one? I'm not saying that CCL defines the meta of heroes, but it definitely greatly influenced a lot of what's happening in Stormleaf.
That is interesting. So if we were to kind of line up our orgs here.
Mm-hmm.
There are those with coaches that we can expect some bizarreness out of. Of course, we've been talking about Oxygen, and I didn't know this was his title, but the Brewmaster is what y'all call Cavalier Guest. That's a great title.
That's news to me. I didn't know that.
that's a great title. But
it's a very good title.
You know, he's engineering in the background. Mm-hmm. You got let's see, Granite Gaming has Chelvin. Is that how I'd say it?
I've heard it's pronounced kind of like Kelvin. So okay. I feel like it's Kelvin. I feel like I've gotten it corrected that way, but I might be completely wrong.
But then that's it for like official established coaches. However, there is a big focus on draft in teams like Wildheart Esports with Justing Pitkin, who then is drafted alongside more sane players so they can hopefully rein in his creativity.
See, now I have this, and I'll admit it on the podcast because I've said it before in the past. I have a tinfoil theory that Wildheart does have a coach. They just don't publicly say who it is. I think not to discredit Wildheart's team by any means or anything. That's not what I'm getting at. I'm just saying that there is some innovation that is coming. It's there's no way that this team is just 400 IQ all the time like this. There's like little things that I'm just like, man, I feel like there's someone in the background kind of giving you a little bit of a push here and there. 30K or not 30K, excuse me, Wildheart. But we'll have to see. I mean, it's this is my tinfoil theory.
I like it.
Mm-hmm.
Really excited for them too, because they grabbed a very much newcomer to the scene in their support role, just to shake things up.
I mean, Mason Blaze, during the free agent tournament, on all the documents that we had, and I believe his application as well, is listed as range support, or range assassin. And they played basically range. No, they played Decker Kane as well. They played support throughout that tournament, and they had a Decker Kane that was literally like getting last hits and just coming in and just like auto attacking to solidify kills. But Mason Blaze also had some of the best Lucio play that I've seen. So like Yasu, Banana, Mason Blaze, they're all these amazing like Lucio players, and I want to see Mason Blaze play more of their support or healer. Let's not unnerve chat too much. A healer in season two of CCL, because I think there's a lot of interesting innovation that Mason Blaze will bring to the table. And that's kind of what I'm most excited about from these teams.
What do you think is going on with this kind of subtrend of multi-role playing players?
It's the sixth man. You make yourself so not desirable, but you make yourself so flexible that when you're swapped in and out, because you can do that in CCL, you can say, all right, game one, we lost on Cursed Hollow. As we're getting the lobby ready for, let's say, Dragonshire, we want to change up the solo lane. So we're going to swap. Let's continue looking at Wildheart. I actually scrolled away from them. There we go. So let's say we're going to swap in. Let's say we swap in Buds for Mason Blaze. The enemy team has not as much information on Mason Blaze at this point. So now you kind of have that kind of catch, and you can rotate players in and out. It seemed to me, at least during the draft, a lot of these organizations want to go for that route during season two. We didn't see much of it during season one, where we would have like, all right, you know, Towers of Doom was this player, or like we had Cascon from Oxygen. And then the next game, you know, Cascon was out and they went back to their main support player or something like that. So that's the innovation I think that we're seeing with some of the draft this season, is I think there's more of a thought of rotating players consistently throughout the matches rather than being like, this is our core five, they play this weekend, that's it.
Yeah, they would even draft like their sixth spot as a drafter, like getting a coach via the free agent pool.
A good example of that is Chilly Mountain, actually. They literally last picked Caterpillar, and they were like, we have so many opportunities for him. We could have him be our, you know, a draft like leader. He could be a coach. He could be part of all the scrims and everything. So it's one of those things that, yes, Chili Mountain has two tank players, but they've got really, really interesting possibilities with these tank players, especially with the knowledge that they picked up.
I always like to think about the connection between watching organized play and watching competitive play, and sure, what you can take that into your games, at, like your games at home. And, you know, seeing, you know, Kyle, like you go through and be a part of leagues for, God, it's been almost a year now, right? Since you've been doing league play. Like, yeah, subs are really common. And so, like, I'm really interested in looking at this through that lens of being like, oh boy, this is, it's probably really fascinating for players at home that are a part of an, of their own Heroes League. They probably have subs for their roster, and now they get to see how it's done with like maybe a higher echelon of player.
A great example. I mean, you're bringing up grassroots esports. There's a team I cast consistently in NGS, the Gilly Sharks, and they will rotate a player in based on either map or how the games are going. Like if they don't feel like they're solo lane strong, they'll just swap in someone who's a flex player but is known for their solo lane. So having a couple of those people on your team to sub in and out really can change the dynamic of your gameplay, as well as the play style against an enemy team that might not be practiced or well versed against that player that's now subbed in. And I think that was underutilized in season one, and I hope that organizations prioritize that going to season two, because I'd love to see more faces rather than saying Kascon had one game in season one of CCL. Like, Kascon's an amazing drafter, don't get me wrong, but it's just, it's a bummer just to say that sentence.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's still in before the draft, right? Like, there's not a Medivh pick and then the enemy has to go.
Yeah, yeah. For anyone wondering, it's not like, that's why I specified game lobby. So the before you hit that start game button in the custom mode, that is your roster. You can't get halfway through the draft and alt F4 and swap in a new player and say they're going to be the Medivh player. It's like, no, that's not how it works. If you go into a lobby with a, or if you start a draft with five players on your team, those are the five players for that game.
I mean, that would like be like trying to swap out a pitcher as the pitch is mid-air. It's like, well, you exactly threw the pitch, but can we get this pitcher swapped out in the middle of the act? What are you doing? No. Yeah.
It would be a cool superpower, though, if you're able to do that. That'd be really cool.
I mean, it'd make the Flash the sub pitcher, I guess.
There you go. All right. Yeah.
Trying to think how
I'm just, I'm picturing it right now, and it's actually kind of great. It'd be wonderful.
It still bothers me because then he has super strength in moving the person, but they don't show him pick up it. There's a lot of camera tricks with the Flash.
It's a lot of mirrors.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a little thin.
Okay, we digress.
let's see if we can, for somebody who missed the draft out there, kind of define a personality to each team, because
we're
sitting on a completely new team like Onyx, but we have names we know, like Bad Benny and God Filth, and then names that have recently arrived, like Uki, who I got to interview on Hogger and is just very excited, very hungry to even be there. Like, they were working hard before getting in the CCL at becoming the best offlaner in the world, and now they've got to be motivated beyond the moon and back. And then they put things like funds in there. So how is that team going to play?
You've got amazing leadership and knowledge through Bad Benny and Got Filth. You've got, as you said, hungry players as well who want to make a name for themselves. I mean, as well as Valimar. I mean, Valimar is one of those up and coming players through, I think, just a lot of grassroots esports. I don't think they ever had any sort of major open division or HGC runs or anything like that. So it's, I would say for Onyx, it's the new org that's hungry for, obviously wins, but they're hungry to prove themselves on the stage. I think that's the big thing that I would say for Onyx is they are a organization and a team that is ready to showcase that they're coming into season two as a strong roster. I would say that they're the hungry roster.
Yeah. Yeah. The fact that we didn't bring up Copenhagen either, but like the fact that these many known players, or at least up and coming players, ended up on one organization who is just entering the sphere of Heroes of the Storm is damn impressive. Storm Esports. This is basically the hurry up and die team, as I've heard, but better put, it's the it's the dive team. The dive team. You got Lauber and BBJ, who are both going to be very much in the business. being followed up by some pretty impressive damage dealers, mm-hmm. but it's also just a team of flex tank support and then flex down the road, except for CPX, who is ranged. Almost boring in comparison to everybody on the team.
Bury me in this, man. I want to see more dive comps. I miss it.
Oh yeah, no, I love. I mean, Lobber is known for being the, as I said in my example earlier, he is that one that likes to lead the charge. I mean, there was a season one game that I can't remember who it was up against, but they went Falling Sword Light Bomb, and it was one of the few times we saw Falling Sword. No, I actually think it was Falling Sword without Light Bomb, because there was a White Mane, and they essentially just used Falling Sword to dive the White Mane every single time. I don't actually think Light Bomb was available, and it was just crazy. We were all like, why would you take Falling Sword, Lobber? But then he took Heaven's Fury at 20 and was on top of it. It might have been funds on White Mane or something, but it was a White Mane that just kept getting dove and shut down. So it's one of those very, very dive heavy through Lobber compositions. BBJ is only going to amplify that. They have a strong roster through and through. Here's my only caveat with this. You ever read patch notes and you think something looks OP on paper, but then you see it in play and it's like, it's whatever.
Yeah,
kind of. That's a little bit how I feel about Storm Esports. Not saying they drafted bad, but it's just on paper it looks amazing. I am holding my breath to see how they actually perform as a full functioning team. That's where I kind of start to kind of back off a little bit. But on paper, this is a stacked roster.
I can see that. I do think they made some good moves though, like Ibi Tings, mm-hmm. and then is this Kill You Zion? Is that how I say that?
Oh, that would be a collusion.
Oh, right.
I prefer the way Kyle pronounces it, frankly.
And my name is Kill Ferguson. Yes. Okay, I get it. But you've got people who are very aggressive who are going to be into that idea. And it's impressive that the personality of their initial picks in a completely new organization agreed with their later picks in that way.
I do want to mention really quickly, just because I saw this in your notes and I just now caught it, is actually Collusion was swapped out for Kwepi. And Kwepi is a Korean offlane player, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, here, I can actually, there you go, DM'd the player to you. It just came through. I want to say it was actually, it was a couple days ago, I think, where the announcement came out. But yeah, Collusion was traded off from Storm for Kwepi. And that's another ranged assassin, but a very, very experienced one at that as well.
Signature Zul'jin, apparently. All right, mm-hmm. That's exciting. That's exciting. And granted, the dive and die Zul'jin is how you get your head on request done. Because okay. Otherwise,
all right.
Because otherwise, people are mad at Kyle.
Well, no. Because if you die in the mid game, people are mad. But nobody should be mad at a 5-minute 4-death Zul'jin because they're just getting hits and they're just questing.
Mm-hmm. I think you're trying to plant some seeds so you don't get yelled at.
I have a 2-second. I just want to temperature check on both of you. What do you think of the recklessness at level one? I've talked to a lot of teams and I have kind of an idea of why it's not picked a lot. But do you two have any opinions on that level one? Basically, if you're at lower health, you get insane stacking really quickly.
So you're talking about why are people not taking it?
I just want to know what your thoughts on it are. That's all. Like, is it a viable talent? Because they changed it. They changed it a while ago. So essentially, at below 50% health or something like that, when you're auto attacking into heroes, you actually build your baseline stacks faster.
Additional stack of U1 axe. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's an interesting thing to highlight. The problem is often if I take Zul'jin, I'm thinking I want to become Hammer. So I'm going Headhunter.
OK, I just want to know your opinion. That's all.
I just want to be Siege Free Hammer.
To my knowledge, and I was opening it up in the past or in the background to make sure I wasn't wrong. Sure. And it turns out this is the case. This is like by far and away the most popular talent for players at home. And I can understand that. Right. Because you're not committing to something you may not get done. In Headhunter.
Mm-hmm.
But I can see why if I thought I was a hot Zul'jin, that I knew my stuff and I could bring home the bacon, I would just rather go for Headhunter.
It's just, yeah, it's an interesting thing because they changed it. It's such a cool idea and a concept for Zul'jin, but everyone's still going Bone Slicer and then here and there Headhunter. Like I just want to get your opinion on it because we had that brought up, and Zul'jin's one of those heroes that they're niche per se, but they're also very difficult to play too.
I mean, to be fair, Headhunter is it feels good.
Yes.
It looks good. It's like a nice solid just burger. You might not be able to eat it all, but you're going to get a good meal. Breaking from that analogy completely, the Bone Slicer people are fanatical. Mm-hmm. Like, you're trying to enjoy your burger there, and they're out with their signs, and they're interrupting this lovely day at BlizzCon. You don't know why they're here, but they're crazy about it. And every time you try to talk to them, you're like, hey... And you're like, hey, what, you know, what's with Q? And they're just like, I don't have time to. You just know Q is awesome. Q is the only build Zul'jin should ever do.
April 22nd, 2021, the day that Kyle Ferguson said that Bone Slicer Zul'jins are akin to hateful evangelicals.
Outside of BlizzCon, yes. To put it in an exact point of view.
Line up Diablo cosplayers. Get your selfies here.
I'm just saying that Q build Zul'jins aren't the type that you approach with sanity for a conversation. You don't approach them on the street, be like, hey, what are you guys about?
You do make a point, just kind of wrap it up, because that was kind of the conversation I had with people, where it's like, oh, Recklessness is good, and Headhunter are only good in ARAMs because they're ARAM talents. If you take Recklessness, you're just putting yourself low and you get dove and die. And my response to them was, well, don't get dove and die. So it's just that easy. It's like killing the right clone on Samura. You just do it. It's not that hard. But I digress. It's just one of those things that we were on the subject, and I was just curious really quickly what your thoughts on that level one were, because it's a little contested in some of the conversations I've had.
I honestly wasn't aware of the bonus stacks in the background.
Yeah, that Recklessness got buffed like in one of the patches we got this year, like one of the three.
Is that your first shot fired this episode, Bahamut? Is that your?
Might be. It might be. I might have slipped a second. Oh, don't. We don't need to talk about Phoenix ults. I made my chat mad last week about me talking about Phoenix ults. So.
Yeah. Now, Recklessness has really found a home in our games at home. Looking at its pick rate, but yeah. No, I get what you're coming at. All right. Well, let's continue with painting a picture of like who the personality of these teams. Let's get to the returning organizations, starting with Chilly Mountain.
Sure. Chilly Mountain, an organization, they actually dropped three, kept three. So they had to actually pick up three new players through the entire draft itself, just to kind of catch everyone up as well. Whereas Storm Esports and Onyx were drafting full new rosters as they were the new organizations coming in. I think Chilly Mountain, as they did have a bit of a struggle in the earlier portion of last season, definitely one of the teams to grow. I said that Onyx is the hungry team, that they want to prove themselves. I think Chilly Mountain wants to prove themselves with growth, realistically. They had a lot of really good late season pickups in season one, but with them picking up, I believe, Banana, Azurite, and Caterpillar through the CCL draft, I think they've locked in a really, really good core six and can grow throughout the season. They might have a bit of a stumble in the beginning, but I think that's them just getting their footing as this roster, because it's really well put together, in my opinion.
It was interesting where they put their efforts to get players, because Caterpillar's sitting around. Everyone knows Caterpillar.
Yeah.
And picked up last as someone who is known for their experience, knowledge, HGC-ness, taught me how to play Leoric in the audience long, long ago. Like, they're a leader, but it sounded like Chilly Mountain was kind of like, no, we've got our three. We've got our shot caller already. We want Banana to shot call in addition to this from the support role, and whoever else happens to be vocal will just kind of happen.
I think there's the big thing with Chilly Mountain is they picked up Gia late, and that was actually really strong for them in the tank role. And I think they just want to amplify that prowess that's already kind of within Gia. And that's maybe where we see this swap between Cattle and Gia to work with some of these maybe louder support players like Banana, as you were mentioning.
I'm excited for them. I want Chilly Mountain to succeed because they're they're so into it. Like when I look at the org owners, when I look at the effort that is put into their Twitter, their Reddit posts, like they are hungry to be great. But season one wasn't very kind to them.
It was a rough start for Chilly Mountain. They had a lot of not a lot of roster swaps, but they had a few roster swaps early. And after that, they really just tried to grow from there. But this season, I look at their roster and what they put together. Make, Bergolt, and Gia, that's already a good core three. Azurite's also a European player that will actually kind of pocket in together with them. Banana's also European player, but French. Whereas I believe Gia, Bergolt, Azurite, Make are all Swiss, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, they're all from Sweden. So you have a little bit of synergy with that. And that was maybe the consideration of Chilly Mountain was also getting players who are in the same region together for communication and play style factors on top of that.
Perhaps next is the team I have no idea what to think of, but they also gave me the biggest roller coaster in the entire draft.
Us too.
And that was Granite Gaming, who threw away the baby with the bathwater. And then attempted to rebuild the entire house before realizing that a family member was missing. It was just kind of a bizarre experience watching them put a team together. They walked away with a good hand, though.
I like what Granite Gaming drafted, but I agree with you. And Grubby literally brought it up in the draft itself. It's just, why did you throw away all of, why did you throw away the entire roster to redraft half the roster? What it boiled down to, from my understanding of what was the initial game plan, there were a few picks that Granite wanted, and I think those got taken away. So their plan B, in a sense, was to still build a roster of players that have played together. So there's probably the reason why we're seeing Svamp Grada, Skoog, Henning, them all coming back. But then you also got Fancy Pants, who proved themselves in a lot of the free agent tournaments. Ty, who played on 30K last season and had some amazing Deathwing plays, if I remember correctly. And then Ultralisk is Ultralisk. It basically is one of the top range assassins, in my opinions. They're listed as flex as well, so there might be some other little things we see from them throughout the season. But I agree, Granite Gaming, that's the one where if I were to give it like a label, I would kind of put question marks because I don't know what I'm expecting to see. Not in a bad way, but I don't know what to expect from Granite.
We'll give them the wild card designation.
Okay, yeah. we'll give Granite the wild card. I get it. Okay, I see what you're doing there.
All right, well, speaking of 30K, let's take a look at how they drafted.
Go ahead, please.
This feels like we almost have to argue against the community right now because everyone's going 30K. Oh, like they schooled it. They wrecked it. It's the best roster there is. And it looks good, but why? Why is that the general opinion?
Hazuab's right there. That's a big name. Hazuab's is a good player, but also a good person at heart and knows how to lead and communicate and work with just about anybody. And that can also be said about Fury and Liam, in my opinion. So you've already got three players on this roster that are so well coordinated. Now, you might be sitting at home saying, but Bahamut, they protected four. BBJ was actually swapped out. BBJ was traded for like a third round pick. So BBJ actually went over to Storm Esports, if I'm not mistaken. Just double checking on myself. Yeah, went over to Storm Esports. And that allowed the members of 30K to, I believe, utilize that pick for X-Ray. And it was a bit of a shock to us because we were like, you're going to prioritize X-Ray so early. You don't have a support. But then we were learning as the draft went on that X-Ray isn't going to be their support player or the healer, if you will. They're actually going to be this main tank. And now you sit there and say, ooh, this is interesting because you've got Fury main tank. You've got X-Ray, who is up and coming main tank. What is this going to mean for 30K? Are you going to have training through Fury? Is this a swap off between the two? That's a big win in that factor right there. But then you have Dino, who has proven themselves as a ranged assassin through and through. And then Yasu, Monka Steer in chat, like that's just Yasu. It's an amazing healer. And then you also have X-Ray to pair in with that. So let's say you want to catch the enemy team off guard. You've been running X-Ray as a main tank. Well, X-Ray can back off and go to Malfurion and have an insane game, but still be an in-game leader as well. So all in all, their roster is super, super synergistic. and it's a core that can just constantly thrive on each other. And I think that's why 30K is considered such a winner within this draft.
Interesting. And there are three protected players we basically don't concern ourselves with. Someone says, have you seen Liam? Have you seen Urel? And you're like, we know. Everyone knows. Like, what else you got for me?
Have you seen their Malfiel?
We're aware.
So it's just one of those things that, like, it's a proven team, and you know that they're going to show up. It's, as I said earlier, I don't want to throw any like shade or anything towards Storm Esports, but it's their roster looks good on paper. I don't know how they play together. Whereas I look at 30K's roster and I go, that team works together. Period.
That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Oxygen Esports. This is our protected Red Robot, Nasmas. This is the Cavalier Guest coach team.
Mm-hmm.
What was their identity in season one for you? Because it almost like they got overshadowed by Wild Hearts drafting.
It was actually kind of like it was almost like Phases of the Moon with Oxygen and Wild Heart throughout the season. Like, it was like the early season, like the first 3 to 4 weeks, Oxygen was like unbeatable. Like, it was a storyline that Doa, Grubby, and I would bring up every so often. Like, who's going to take the one game off of Oxygen this week? Is it possible? And Wild Heart actually did that. And they showed that there was an Achilles heel to Oxygen. I believe they lost still, but Oxygen is the team that innovates. And that is what really, really stood out to me from season one. Oxygen was the team to bring out Monstrosity Abathur. Oxygen was the team to bring out Mind Control Sylvanas. You had just these innovations where they were able to change up the play style. I'm sure Oxygen played a bunch of Leap Sonya, and I was very happy about that. But the other thing to note too is they have growth constantly. Madara as a young player within Heroes of the Storm, like, I think they started just before season one of CCL. Nasmas is an established melee assassin and has just history. Red Robot's an upcoming tank player that has proven themselves. And Kaskon's drafting with Cavalier Guest coaching has left an impact on that season. Now, towards the latter half, they were a lot more beatable. And I think people figured out the play style, which was either macro or micro, but it's like heavily one way or the other. I don't think they balance that very well. Going into the season, though, with Draded and Heavy being picked up, I think that's really where they can kind of reel things in through their draft, specifically through Draded, who's got a lot of previous experience and has worked with Cavalier Guest.
I have a ridiculously high opinion of Red Robot, merely me from too. Storm League, because yeah, I end too. Up in his games and he always gives 110%. Like, just regardless of the moment, we're core diving, we're gonna backdoor, get down the wall on the side, this is our one chance, just always fully invested. And I've never met the guy, but I love him.
I would say, though, just to wrap up Oxygen's draft, to label it like we have with everything, they continue to be the team that will be innovators. Not that they're going to be like pulling out these like crazy drafts by any means, which we could see, but I think that they're going to be the ones who take the meta that we currently have and take it further. I think, you know, like, we have, let's say we have the main tank Maiev. Well, how can they expand upon that? I feel like that's very much the play style and draft mentality of Oxygen through what they picked up on draft day.
But even though Oxygen protected the same number as mm-hmm. Wild Heart, I feel like Wild Heart has the older team. Like, just wheel them on in. They're ready. It's Wild Heart as you know it. It's going to look very similar to what it did. You know, Justing, Zergling, Buds, Unaverted. You know them, you love them. Here they come. And then they kind of picked up some names. Like we said, that Mason Blaze, but also I'm not very familiar with Weary Day, who was also redrafted. Just let go because they had to.
Yeah, Weary Day played, they played support, but it was swapped out. I think Weary Day was their main support last season, if I'm not mistaken.
Our last and then, two rosters here, Wild Heart and Simplicity, the only two teams that were able to successfully redraft someone? I think so.
Yeah, let me double check something really quickly, because
Granite Gaming, of course, went wild heading on the redraft.
But I mean, still, redrafting turns out a pretty rare occurrence this season.
You do actually bring up a really good point with that. I didn't think about that whatsoever. We only had a couple of redrafts per se with Wild Heart and Simplicity, but yeah, like, there was that redraft of Granite Gaming's core roster in a sense. It's just, I think Wildheart is the family organization and they've built themselves around that. Still nothing negative about it, but it's that's how their organization functions. They're very family driven, and it's like, this is, we're all together, we're all in this together, and we all got each other's backs. And redrafting Weary Day, that's bringing that fifth member back in that already synergizes. But I like what Wildheart's doing, because when they had their draft pick up and available, I think Funds was up and available, and I was expecting Goon just to say Funds, but he goes for Mason Blaze. And I'm happy about that, because what Wildheart did is says, we have a core five roster. We know that these five work together. Let's give someone else a chance. Let's bring in Mason Blaze. And Mason Blaze, as I mentioned beforehand, has proven themselves time and time again through grassroots as well as the free agent tournament that they are a strong support healer, range assassin, probably flex realistically.
I was about to say, think about the flex that you just rattled off. It gives them a lot of roster flexibility with what roles they now have access to when Mason Blaze gets slotted in.
Exactly. It's you don't see Funds come in and you go, ooh, it's time for Lily. Like, that's not a bad thing, but it's like, you bring in Funds. That's not like it was a limited pool, but it was, you brought in Funds for only a couple different heroes. And I think Mason Blaze is really going to amplify that kind of craziness, as I talked about beforehand.
Now, in comparison to that, because Wildheart Esports kept most of their roster, did really well last season, got second place. We see Simplicity, our final team, protect for redraft immediately hosty. But they had a rougher season, ended up in sixth place last go. Mm-hmm. So what is different now?
It feels very similar to Wildheart's draft, in the sense of they locked in what they felt is going to be, you know, what won season one for them, in the sense of this roster synergized, they communicated, they knew how to play together. And I think this is the same kind of thing as Wildheart. You're bringing in this flex through Jay, who is going to be swapped out with Hosty consistently. I think Jay is going to be a integral part of this roster to succeed, especially because of Jay's offlane prowess. Jay actually, it might be like we were talking about beforehand, double offlane, main tank, a healer, and then a ranged assassin. And we could see that with Jay coming in. Hosty might, you know, come in every so often with like a Nazebo or something like that. But in the end, I think Jay is actually going to be a critical factor for Simplicity as the season goes on, because that's their niche player, if you will. Hosty is also niche as well. And so you have these two interesting flexes for Simplicity to catch the enemy team off guard.
That can really mess with like the bans and whatnot as well.
Yeah, exactly.
We started this episode talking about just how settled the meta is. I mean, at home and competitively, they're pretty much in tandem at the moment. But if you have these players that have these really unique picks that are not shared by every team, what does that mean? Do we throw a ban at one of their specific picks to try and throw them off their game? Well, cool, we can do that. But what are you leaving on the table as a potential pickup as a result of that targeted ban? That's always who blinks first that I really like about that.
We talked about subs earlier when we were talking about like Kyle playing in grassroots themselves and having subs. This is a great example of, once again, teams I've casted where one team has an Abathur player. And if you don't do your research, but you know that that team plays Abathur and you don't watch the draft, someone might ban out Abathur, but that Abathur player is not even the opposing side. So you just got a free ban against the enemy team, just wasted a ban essentially. So that is a little bit of a motif exactly, Garrett, where you're able to throw off the enemy team by swapping in. Let's say we're on the topic of Simplicity. They're swapping in Hosty for Jay and we're going to Tomb of Spider Queen. That could be a Nazebo map. That could be an Asmodan map. You could technically run Vikings there. This could be Sonya. There's a, like, Rek'Sar's prowess is great on this map as well. There's a lot of interesting directions that Simplicity can take the draft based on who's just in the lobby. And that's what I'm excited for as well. I keep saying this, but I really, really hope the organizations utilize that sixth pick a little bit more this season than last.
And it seems like they want to. Like every org and on their way out made some sort of mention, some more than others, that they were making use of their sixth pick this season, or you'll be seeing the whole roster. So let's
up to them.
Let's try to deduce beyond the teams a little bit.
Sure.
First and foremost, is there anything you saw in the free agent tournament that makes you think this season's meta is going to be different. Still in the same patch, basically. Some changes have happened. Some heroes have elevated. Augur has, of course, become a mainstay at this point. But what do you think the hero picks are going to be like?
I definitely think there'll be a priority onto, as I was mentioning, the bruisery tank compositions, as well as the double supports. Dive comps might be a little less prioritized, but I feel like that's going to be only because of play style of the teams. So realistically, the safe play from maybe some of the teams that are a little bit greener or still trying to get to know each other a little bit, we might see this more bruisery, hard to kill or double support compositions. Whereas the teams like Simplicity and Wildheart, where they're comfortable with each other, they might go a little more outrageous and try and go for those dive explosive wombo combos. The early portion of the season, I'm expecting to kind of see that split between teams, either really, really big comfortability shown through their drafts and picks, and then also just safety drafts as well from some of those newer teams. I feel like that's going to be the split up until we get about a couple weeks in when these teams are really well versed with each other. And that's when there's going to be some exploration of, you know, like, oh, well, this team, you know, they've never played against a Samuro. Can we throw a Samuro at them in like week number three? And that's when you start to really start to change up the meta. I hope that we see more dive, and I hope that we see more global play in the sense of like Abathurs and Lost Vikings and just this more map control, not in the sense of macro, but literal just map control throughout. That's what I would expect, and that's what I'm hoping for.
Fascinating.
It's interesting that the prevalence of Brightwing didn't bring that about in season one. It's almost as though the way we were playing Brightwing pre-nerf there was very much a attendant rather than a global hero. So we didn't, like HGC times, there'd be a overpowered maybe Dahaka, and every other global hero, Falstad and Brightwing, would just be elevated by this one hero. Just because Brightwing was everywhere didn't mean we had a global game going on.
Right.
I mean, did you just answer your own question there? It's like, is Brightwing the answer? Is that the main difference between season one to season two? Is that Brightwing isn't going to be as hot of a commodity? Because I'm looking at the rest of this list of the most picked heroes from season one, and I struggle to think I won't be seeing a lot of these heroes. Your Medivhs, your Chromies, your Cassias, your Divas, Uther, Hogger, Johanna, Stukov.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's something else that I think is going to heavily impact us at home. If I were to target one takeaway that the community is about to realize, it's going to be Junkrat on Alterac Pass.
Yeah.
And because Alterac Pass has entered the rotation, we are getting rid of Volskaya Foundry for reasons. Which I think we discussed last time you were on.
The players voted on it. We literally put it to the players. Sure.
I believe they do that.
So yeah,
fun fact. Really quickly, fun fact as well. We had more than just like the standard maps on there. There's like Blackheart's Bay was on there, and there were two votes for Blackheart's Bay. And to whoever voted on that map, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It makes me happy. But
I don't want to play on it personally, but I would love to watch play on it.
See, me too. As a caster, I was pumped because I'm not the one playing on it, but like I get to see, because Blackheart's Bay, it's just, as we're talking about meta, it has a completely different meta in its own compared to many of the maps that we have in rotation. So
devolves into just a giant brawl pit. And that can be really fun to watch, especially at high levels of play.
Now, do you, like, going back to Alterac Pass, because I'm curious about your two opinion on this. Do you think that this is a better map? Let's just talk about the objective, because we kind of memed about it last season, Grubby and I. Do you feel like the objective is more valuable in Alterac? Do you feel like the map's better? What do you think is the reason that the players might have prioritized Alterac over Volskaya going into season two?
If I were to take a guess, it's that they already have Chromie and Junkrat players available. And they're like, yeah, we've got the cheat code for this particular map. If you're asking overall if it's a good map, I do kind of have an opinion that it's advanced towards pre-update Cursed Hollow. Like, we're in that zone where you get to the objective first for the first objective. You're going to lose that in a team fight, and they're going to get control of yours while you're dead. And there's that whole, like, we reported early, but we're slightly bruised up. You reported late and we're fully healed. You win kind of situation going on there in the early game.
Because what if I were to tell you that teams typically ignore it till level 10 in a lot of the in-houses I cast? Because that's that actually...
I'm in for that. I'm here for that. That sounds good.
My theory is this, is that the first objective is 30 seconds, second is 40, and then the third and onward is capped at 50 seconds. Your first objective is your shortest. So I feel like there's a lot of more, let's play macro till 10 and then fight over this, because if we can get a kill, we guarantee that objective. Because around 10 talent, you're looking at death timers that would equalize for that. And I feel like if you go for it immediately at the 3 minute mark of the game or the 2 minute 30, you're setting up to position around it, you're losing opportunities on the map, because you can still split off and grab that null camp from mid. You can constantly press out your lanes. It's a different play style. And that's the one thing I was curious about is I wonder if that whole 10 talent tier, then we come to the objective, is going to continue into season two, or if this is just going to be what we saw in in-houses and it's completely just a different play style. Cause if it is the former of the two, I would love to see that consistently happen on Alterac, where it's hit 10 talent here, fight over first objective, get some massive push, and then we have momentum on the map.
You basically just solved my issue, which is the death timers being in the wrong direction for the early objective, so people are now avoiding it. That explains a lot, too, going on in my games where the enemy team will, like, right at the 3 minute mark, get the objective, and someone will be like, that was wrong. You don't do that. That's weird. Why would they do this? And I'm like, I don't know. I think they got the objective. Now the things are coming at us and Chubby Bunny's screaming in the back that we need to defend. And I'm completely overwhelmed.
Well, we both learned something today, Kyle.
There is the other factor, too, and maybe this is the consideration, is the actual scaling of the objective phase itself, because obviously things scale in Heroes of the Storm based on minutes or waves. And by level 10, that objective is a little bit more... influential in your push, rather than it's like getting a Dragonite to, like, you know, 3 minutes into the game, it wails onto a fort, but it wails onto it for like 300 damage. So it's maybe it's that factor as well, as the game has scaled up and your push power is even more amplified, even though it already amplifies it a touch, regardless of the level in the game.
The fact that it eventually does level up to the point where it is impactful, I think, puts it like leagues ahead of Olskaya. Which, you know, sure. Again, we talked about a lot in the last time you were here, which I was reminding Chad or listeners at home, like, that conversation we had is still relevant. So if you're curious, well, what's wrong with Olskaya? Go listen to the last episode that Bahamut was on, because there was quite a bit of a deep dive into that subject. But I have a soft spot for Alterac. I like large maps. I like the chance that, you know, smaller skirmishes, like the chance for that to happen because of large maps. I like that it empowers globals. We just talked about simplicity, picking up a Vikings player, like all of those things become exciting on a map as large as Alterac Pass. My concerns are, is it can be snowbally. I would say, like, at worst, Alterac Pass is boring when it snowballs. And at best, it is super, super interesting in close games. Like, cause if you can save it, if you can like maybe you pushed preemptively, maybe you didn't push hard enough, and someone res quick enough, and you actually get people off the core. Anytime there's a core push and it doesn't succeed, I am so excited about Alterac, because the core heals back up. But
I also think that you make a really good point in this as well, because I was just thinking about the things that I love about this map. It can be snowbally, but even with those snowball moments, if one keep is gotten, it's not game over. That's the cool thing, because of the core having spell and physical armor 20 per every keep available. So oftentimes one keep going down isn't going to be GG's. It's far and few between, in my opinion, when you actually have that one keep go down and a team rushes through the lane and ends game off of a team fight. It's really rare when that happens because of how long it takes to damage that core. Obviously late game, if this is the case, we're talking about different scaling and such, but that's also the thing I like about Alterac. It reminds me a little bit of like Towers of Doom. The competitive drive and back and forth is very, very prevalent. Unlike Volskaya, as we said, the objective phase can feel kind of like a Volkswagen pushing into a lane. So it's just not strong.
And now I'm just trying to remember the name of those hideous Russian cars, because I think that would be a better analogy than a Volkswagen. But sure.
What, Trabants? I mean, it's not Russian. Those are the Romanian cars made out of cardboard. My parents had one. It had like an old like motorbike engine and stuff. Like, yeah.
Someone's going to be a history buff and know in chat room. I just know it. It was made for like something crazy, like 60 years under the Soviet Union. But anyway, doesn't matter. Neither here nor there. Yeah, I've got a real soft spot for Alterac. But whatever the case is, Kyle, you seem lost in thought. What I can hear the gears turning.
I'm just trying to figure out why. First of all, we briefly talked about a Zul'jin main being picked up, which I'm very excited about. But
yeah,
a popularity percent of one, like 1% of games even had a Zul'jin in it. I'm just kind of going through some of the low pick heroes here. And there's things that, of course, like no mind blown at all, like Nova, Butcher, Rhaegar, maybe a little weird given the abundance of double support. But you say double support Rhaegar and you're like, why? What's that? What's that for? He's a Storm League hero below Plat, and that's kind of his place. But, you know, no Illidans really. Tyrann does. There was the fancy Nazebo to counter the Deathwing that I just love on paper. But even things like Lili only got that buff right at the end of season one.
I expect more Lili this season. To go back, as you were mentioning about like top priority and meta picks, I completely blanked on this. Mei is going to be prevalent in season two of CCL. That's going to be a big tank for us. I've seen it in so many in-houses, so many scrims in grassroots. I've seen it everywhere. Mei is she's up in priority when it comes to tanks. So I think we'll see Lili as well, Kyle. I think Lili is going to have a bigger showcase this season as well.
That's what I'm excited about. So I was going to ask you that, Bahamut. I wanted to get your personal take on what you're like what hero? Because like, there's still that about it. Like, what hero are you really excited about seeing play? Because I think you mentioned Mind Control Sylvanas like three or four separate times throughout this episode.
Oh, so I love it. It's such a player.
Yeah, because like I'm very excited to see Lili play because I've really taken I've rediscovered a love for Lili post her light rework in the most recent patch.
Man, most anticipated hero to see this season. It's really, really hard to say, but actually, maybe because I don't play it, but I respect it a lot. I want to see actually some Valyra play. I've seen some decent Valyras here and there sprinkled in, and I feel like she's getting a little bit of momentum. But I like dive compositions with a Valyra in them, or these compositions that have like a great laner and then a Valyra kind of floating around, and anyone who's in the lane with Valyra can find a kill. I think that's a big hero that I'd love to see. That and also Chen. I love Wandering Keg Chen. It's such a playmaking and such a fun hero to see. And of course, because I have to mention it, Cho'Gall. Of course.
Of course. Naturally. As a caster.
You gotta.
Murky.
But realistically, the Chen and the Valyra, I think those are really interesting because Valyra has some awesome counterplay. Like she can shut down Gul'dan. She can shut down Vikings, actually, is a playstyle I've seen as well. So.
Oh, she's a Hogger Destroyer. If you get silenced on that hero, you're gone.
So that's I would love to see more Valyra. And I think there's possibilities for that with how much I've been seeing it tested and played with.
It's something that is an older opinion, but I still see it around all the time about how could this game ever have Tracer in it? What a broken what a broken thing that is. But when we get to tournament play, things like Valyra and Tracer are really tame because you have to work so hard to recover your draft in the macro sense. And that's why we see so much Johanna as like this, like, oh, fix the draft, get a Johanna. And then if you don't get Johanna, you're like really in a tough spot. But what about our Bruiser meta? Because we are hurtling towards 3 weeks out, season rollover. That's the patch as we've all targeted it. And we all assume Sonya, Hogger, get out of here. D.Va, you're kind of a problem, but not everyone's India, so it's okay-ish. Like, where does that put the meta? Because every other bruiser is basically in this bottom 10% of even picked up.
I think it might go to the play style of the teams in the sense of this. Like, let's say we live in a world where D.Va, Hogger, Sonya, they all get nerfed and our bruisers are pretty much middle of the road. They're all in an okay spot, but they're not the massive playmakers they were beforehand. I think we start to look at bruisers that actually are playmakers. We start to look back at our Urels, who have control with the Righteous Hammer, her Dauntless as well. We could see more Imperius as well on top of that for his Celestial Charge setup, his Angelic Armament at level 10. I think that might be the shift that we see. So it might be more synergistic to the playstyle. So if a team's going for a dive comp, maybe we see a priority onto a Imperius or maybe even a Zul for extra lockdown to set up the team for a kill. Sonya might be just as prevalent because I personally think even before she got the changes to her slam, I still think that she was insanely just middle of the road good. Like she checked every box, can grab camps, can do objective, can team fight, can solo link, can everything. So it's going to come down to comfort, and I think it's going to come down to the draft itself in how that they're able to utilize these bruisers, because like Malphio's kind of okay-ish right now. He's not impossible to kill, but he's also not the easiest to kill. Like I said beforehand, he's like nailing Jello to the wall. It's just not always working out for you.
And the other big one that kind of comes to mind, removed from our previous discussions, is Malfurion, who didn't really get a chance to show off his fancy new sleep talents at the end of season one.
I don't, honest to God, you two, I don't know how that got into the game. That, like, I read that, and I'm very, very against being like, I read a patch note and I've decided on whether it's good or bad. I read that and I was like, that, no, why? Stop. I understand Malfurion's not that prioritized, but like, this is mean. This is just mean. Like, it's not fun to be on the receiving end of Emerald Dreams. No. Why is this in this? Sorry. So why is this in the heroes for so long?
You think we're going to see some Malfurion?
Mm-hmm. Especially on like Towers of Doom and stuff, or even Infernal Shrines for poke and zoning. It's just so good.
Probably would have seen Blackheart's Bay then too, if Blackheart's Bay had gotten enough votes.
Yeah.
If only it got like 10 more votes or something, you know?
No, CCL player. it does, you know, we're talking, like I brought up Junkrat, you know, an Ultrak Pass, Junkrat, you know, the match made in heaven, which then causes Storm League to go, Junkrat's good everywhere. Like, if you guys really wanted Blackheart's Bay to be showcased in tournament play, get ready for endless Tracers, endless Gengis, like all these multi-attackers that everybody hates at home that can open a box fast.
Mm-hmm. The divas of the world as well. They're able to burn through those. I think Hogger would actually be insane on Blackheart's Bay if you could just hog wild. Does the chest count as terrain or do you go through it?
I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't know, but I remember I had one game and the flaming loot crate worked, so I didn't have to use my
there you go. That's sustained damage from that. So I forgot about that. Yeah, you could just talent into that and that'll be easy enough. But yeah, I definitely think we're going to see a shakeup in the meta, but we will still see high priority onto Medivh bans, Chromie, Cassia, Diva, Stukov. All of that's going to be high priority until we see changes on them. And it's crazy. Like, Stukov's not outrageously, like, overpowered in talents. The Biotic Armor got nerfed, but they nerfed the wrong aspect of it last time, so maybe they'll change it this time. But overall, like, Stukov's not like, oh, he's just OP. He's just... There's a lot of really good Stukov players in CCL, and I think that's the reason we're seeing so much value into him as well.
Yeah, that's a noteworthy disconnect, too, from what we see in CCL to what we see in our home games. Like, there's just not even close to that many, like, seasoned Stukov players in pickup games.
Well, and there's also the factor of, like, the Varian in our own home games, where, like, if they get the Varian, they get the Stukov, and you're like, who knows? And then you turn around and go, they're working together! they're actually doing it, guys!
Like a good example, like, Stukov, to me, is, like, the Kel'Thuzad of healers. Like, you have to be really mechanically savvy. Virulent Reaction at level 13, where you have to get the Weighted Pustule plus the Root at the same time. Like, that, like, the idea of that, I look at my keyboard and go, no, I'm going to go play a bruiser instead. No, thank you. I don't want to push those buttons in that order. It's just not going to work.
If I could consistently get Stukov in ARAM, it would be the best trainer on God's Green Earth for that combination. Yes, that is actually true. But you have the gods will decide.
The ARAM gods.
We ended up in one of those in our last patron game night, Kyle, because I was on the Stukov, and you were like, I don't know, Garrett, see if he can do it. It was, I was getting the hang of it, and that's because, well, it's ARAM. They didn't really have anywhere to run except through my stuff.
Yeah, we got to give you the whole, the fun experience of it, too, where you were doing the growing expansion with the target me, I'm an off-tank Stukov, and then get the multi-tanks in there with the Ballisto spores. Like, it's very fun, but it's definitely one of those heroes where, like, you have to play all the game to 13 first, mm-hmm. and then suddenly remember how to actually play the hero.
Yeah. 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 You don't get the opening, you know, slower part of the game, you know, training of what you're supposed to be doing, the refresher as you get there. You're just...
It's the same thing we have against Kerrigan's and Alarax. Like, you have that combo since the door opened. And if you can't hit it, we all hate you. But if, let's say, you know, pull on out a telekinesis on Alarax unlocked at 13, we'd probably be a lot more chill.
Well, maybe it's a good thing then for Sukov then, Kyle, because like it gives everyone else on the team hope until you're.
That's a good point.
Otherwise.
Say, I do the same thing with hammers. I'm like, oh my goodness, maybe they're a hover siege main. Like, maybe we just get to hover siege and they realize that they can move slightly sideways and they've got this down.
No, they just go. What is it? The growing ranger. I forget the name. Yep. There you go.
Graduating range.
Graduating range. I think that sounds right.
And then you're like, oh wait, that one. They have no idea where they're supposed to be.
Eventually they'll be able to attack if they stand still long enough, which is in Heroes of the Storm. Everyone knows the standing still is your best friend.
Yeah, sure. It's a good thing that Chromie's not hot right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Li Ming. Or yeah. Getting trained on hammer would not be easy.
At home games. When has Li Ming not been hot?
It's true. It's true. It's a high octane.
Day one of Calamity no longer clears waves. Li Ming still had the same number of games played, probably. Like,
but let's pursue that thread for a moment, because Hammer is a possibility. Granted, you know, not a popular one, but did actually see quite a few games compared to the likes of even Lili and Nazebo and all that sort of thing.
Oh, sure, yeah.
We know Vala and Greymane from the past. Everyone's aware of Cassia. What else is there? Like, I've seen super carry Hanzos.
Oh. So are we saying just for like a hyper carry role? Like you've got your gray mains that siege really well, Valas that build out and can become explosive, right around level 13. I've actually seen a couple Ghul'dans, but usually it's like a battery Aurel or something like that with them. That is pretty prevalent. Sylvanas as well. I mentioned her a couple times. I personally just love, I love Sylvanas as a character in Heroes of the Storm, but also her kit, and slowly but surely her heroics are actually, you know, Wailing Arrow, Mind Control, they're both really, really viable. That level 20 Call of the Dark Lady, I think it is, just the cooldown reduction is ridiculous, because you can throw out like a Mind Control every like 15 seconds, and so it's like Valkyrie on steroids from Cassia, which that's kind of, if you're getting at like these hyper carries, Sylvanas does play into that role, because you have a 15 second mind control at level 20, and while you do have a bruisery comp, you can still burn someone down with three bruisers that collapse on top of a target that is mind controlled. So our hyper carries that we could see, there's a lot of them. It's just, will we see teams actually take risks to go beyond the quote unquote comforts?
Fair. And yeah. There's also Falstad, who's now a thing, but will also be restricted off his level 1 talents, right?
yeah.
That's some opinions there.
Yeah, it's just how long have we gone with some key new features on Falstad here? This it actually bothers me a little bit, because it's been
5 weeks.
It's been too long, in my opinion. That's the issue.
Right.
Because here's the thing. Dishonorable Discharge has a unique feature with your hammering as well. So that's the reason it's currently bugged out in a lot of grassroots esports for Heroes of the Storm. And there's also the level 13 that's busted as well with all of that. So it's really frustrating to me that we have all of this cool new Falstad stuff, but we can only use half of it in competitive. And then the other half you see only played in your Storm League because it's quote unquote busted.
Wait, so I'm aware of the slow resetting on Dishonorable Discharge. What's the 13 thing?
Charged up. It basically plays into the Dishonorable Discharge procking with the hammering, I believe. So I think those two are both banned out because they both trigger the hammering slow proc to continue.
Oh, geez. So, yeah, you're not even allowed to even make kind of a lightning rod build in the background then.
Yeah, no, it's full auto attack build with the only variations of like Tailwind cooldown reduction, I think, at level 13 or giant or the it's not Giant Killer, but it's essentially Giant Killer. I can't remember what they called it for Falstead now, but he's also got that. So those are the pickup. But Charged Up at level 13 is no longer taken because it has the same interactions as level 1 from Dishonorable Discharge. So I just like it just bothers me. Like, we got this cool rework and we can't use it in competitive nature. And it's just like, please, just I want it. I just want to be able to see it and talk about it. That's the big thing. So that's only my 2 cents on it.
That's fair and tracks with like the last month of this podcast.
Yeah, no, I've heard some rumblings every so often as okay, well. And I'm like, nope, no, I'm right there with you, bud.
If it's charged up, that's 7. That's not 13.
Not charged up. Thunderstrikes? What is the 13?
Thunderstrikes is 13.
Oh, then it's Thunderstrike. Sorry, okay. My mistake. I know it's the 1 in 13.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's the lightning rod deals 20% more damage each subsequent strike.
Yeah, and I believe 13. That, and I believe that triggers the hammering proc issue as well again. If I'm not mistaken.
Gotcha.
And that's the reason it's not picked up.
Falstead needs some work. Mm-hmm. Needs some work.
So just a few more weeks, I guess.
Before we're done with esports entirely, let's talk about more Heroes esports because it was announced that Heroes is returning to DreamHack with a CCL tie-in.
Yeah, there is going to be, I believe there's like a show match with one of the CCL teams, and actually was announced through Bimmy's Twitter, and it's going to be Storm Esports who goes up against the winner of this DreamHack, or at least the show match.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, starting May 14th, running through July 25th. And again, this all of this broke via Bemi Esports Twitter account. So if you're not following at Bemi Esports and you're interested in more competitive HOTS, you should probably throw it a follow.
Also, if you have any questions about it, Bimmy is answering on Twitter. I did see that he was answering Hazuobs, Leon Black. So there are people that are asking him questions about if is it region locked, which it's not. Is it, you know, what servers are going to be play on, etc. So if you have any questions or you want to learn more about it, Bimmy is answering through his Twitter. If you just want to check out the thread and just throw a question to him, I'm sure he can get back to you about it. Or you can find more information through said thread.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a link in the show notes or just go give Bemi a follow at Bemi Esports on Twitter. So that was exciting to hear. I've always been a big DreamHack fan just in general. So glad to see HOTS coming back to it. So this has been a deep dive conversation. We want to answer like one question. We'll open the mailbag, take one question before we end. Does that sound good to everyone? Sounds
good to me.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Darkness, stop calling.
Does anyone else hear that buzzing?
Hold on. Darkness just texted me.
You can send your emails to itncast@gmail.com. If you're supporting us on Patreon, just hit us up in the Discord. Woody writes in and says, why is Blastwave the go-to build? I'm pretty sure it's not only good because of double melee being common, but who knows? Maybe I have the wrong impression. Hold up, Kyle. Was this the dude that got flamed because he referenced our podcast to a guy that flamed him for going Blastwave build?
Yes. So
you cut out the best part of the email.
This is a bit of a story.
Wild, man. I've heard people talk smack about something I've said on a podcast before, but what Woody wrote in about was some of the most weirdly, like, I'm not even sure some of this stuff is actually like a thing. I've never been accused of faking real time conversation.
That is the most bizarre aspect of the show. But I mean, if you want to go there, like,
no, guess what? It's when you're hanging so out, weird. This person's a freak. Like whoever this person was, you are a weirdo.
Like, maybe we need to be like, and Bahamut too. Like, when Bahamut's casting, he doesn't talk like that when he's ordering a pizza. Like, when Garrett and I talk,
is that what they're
offline,
saying? Is that what they're trying to say? So I don't want to get this wrong. So Woody, okay, I pulled up. I found Woody's full email here. Okay, I don't want to get this wrong. No, this is so wild. I usually don't do this, but I found this so utterly bizarre. Like, I think this person is like the missing link. I think Bigfoot hates our podcast. Like, that's how strange these complaints are. So long story, like, the TLDR on this is that Woody went Blastwave build, got flamed for it, and then was like, oh, yeah, I heard it was good on Into the Nexus. And this one individual in their game just unloaded about how much they hate us, apparently. And where is it? What really gave me a chuckle is that when I brought up the podcast as evidence in my favor, he seemed to have very strong opinions about y'all, particularly your inability to do on-the-fly calculations and how you fake real-time conversation. Well, Kyle, he figured us out. This random individual figured this out. This is actually a turn-based podcast, but we edit it after the fact to make it sound real time.
Yes. Yes. And of course,
what does that even mean? Real time conversation? All conversations are real time, you nut.
I don't know. Maybe they think people actually like immediately follow up when they talk to each other in real life. They don't take time to think. I mean, Bahamut, when you're on stream, your math is perfect, 100%. Oh,
absolutely. I didn't make up an entire terminology around the fact that I can't do live math. No. I do perfect math all the time. There's no such thing as caster math. No.
Everyone knows that the best, most personable personalities are actually scientific calculators.
Yeah.
I didn't bring this up because I was like dying laughing. I was like, I have never been so entertained by insults in my life. These are the weirdest insults I've ever heard.
They're so weird. You can't take them personally, but let's help out Woody here for a moment because, so what happened is, you know, they're in quick match. There's a hammer on the other side and they go blast way build. You did the right thing, Woody. You were going to lane clear. You were going to take care of other jobs. Dropping a meatball on top of hammer is not the greatest contribution that Ragnaros can make. And I think you stick by your good build.
I'm right there with Woody. Go blast wave. Go blast. Like I'm a sulfurous hungers boy through and through. Big hammer just goes smack is wonderful. But I recognize and I absolutely agree. Blast wave is top tier. Meatball build, great, sure. Shifting meteor, change direction, wonderful. Woo, you've hit the hammer for 300 damage. Gets healed up immediately by the Ana standing behind them. Whereas blast wave, it's more impactful for your team. Let's say you need to give some speed to yourself to get away from someone because you overextended. Or let's say Diablo wants to shadow charge in on the hammer. More damage to Diablo. So whoever this person is, they have no idea what they're talking about. Also, if they're taking quick match that serious, they should probably calm down a little bit. Just saying.
I would also like to say, Woody, thank you for not mentioning what I said that I liked about Blast Wave, though, because it probably would have made that individual's head explode, because if I remember correctly, I said, I like this because Meatball Build's just awkward and hard, and I don't want to play it.
Yes, usually when you're having a conversation about why something went wrong, saying, oh, I was having fun, or it was easy for me, is not the right way to calm down an individual.
I get clearly I'm a salty individual. I get it. I understand getting salty, but
sure.
Like, what is quick match for? What are we doing? We're either there because we're like, we're just trying to relax and wind down and we just want to play the hero we want to play, or we're trying to learn a hero. We're picking a specific hero because we want to learn them. We want to try something specific. I'll never understand like,
I'm right there with you. Like I'll go like when Hogger came out, and this is just me because of my own just personal take on how I like to play games. But like when Hogger came out, I went into AI, I tested a bunch of builds and I was like, this is the build that I want to try against actual human beings. And then I took it into quick match and it didn't work. And I was like, huh, all right, maybe this doesn't work against human beings. And then people be like, God, your Hogger's trash. And I'm like, that's why I'm here. I'm trying to test things against humans. But then it's just like, we'll go back to AI. And I'm like, well, AI is not teaching me what I need. So yeah, my PSA, I'm right there with you. If you get salty in quick match, maybe turn off your chat, bud. I don't know. It you shouldn't get salty in quick match. If you lose, just GG, go next. Some games are yours, some games are not. I don't get it. I really don't get it.
There's too many random like things that can just go horribly, horribly wrong, starting with just your team's composition in quick match. So giving yourself over to the fates a certain degree by just opting into that mode in the first place.
True. And every Illidan deserves his day. His one day of the month.
What do we say? Like one out of 17 times the Illidan gets his.
and it's all the octane sweet hit he needed to keep doing that other 16 games.
I mean, but we've all been there. It's beautiful when you do get your Illidan game.
Sadly, I do that with Leoric, which doesn't sound like, but an undrafted Leoric game is kind of just open for the wins. But we do need to acknowledge a little bit that there is a change in the overall thought process of players. For a long, long time, we said any plan is better than no plan, and even the worst idea is the one that you should follow. Is that right? Is worst? I always get confused on that one. Less good? In the past, if there was a boss being started on Cursed Hollow, we would all say, that's the plan, everybody pile on, because at least something's happening and we didn't wander around in the woods for a whole 15 seconds. But with the CCL requiring masters, with a lot of old players coming back and the top end doing a lot of, you know, bronze GM challenges or having smurfs in maybe a more stale meta, it is very clear that we've switched towards more of a don't follow bad players sort of mindset. And the community is butting heads on this right now. They can't decide if you're good, you just keep doing good things and take the loss because you know what's right. Or do you invest in the bad plan because at least it's a plan? And those two factions are warring it out in quick match right now.
I have like an answer for you, which is actually something I learned from this podcast ages ago. When I was learning and getting better and better at this game and growing as you do with any MOBA, I was listening to this podcast a lot, and there used to be the educational like sections that you would do here and there. And there was an email or at least a whole breakdown of like, what do you do when a team is doing something that you know is wrong, but they're all into it or invested? And there's those moments where it's like, all right, sometimes going with the wrong choice could actually be the correct choice because you've invested into that. And sometimes that Hail Mary per se, or that overextension, or just the aggression works out. And it's one of those things that you have to sit there and kind of acknowledge, could this have an actual positive outcome, or is this just an absolute wipe? And that's really the kind of the scale that tips back and forth with what I think you're bringing up here is sometimes, you know, there's a wrong call. Like, we shouldn't invade 4v5 because we know the enemy team's there, but we might be able to catch them off guard. Diablo might have a massive shadow charge and we can win in this corridor because our composition works better in a tighter fight or something like that. So it's such a hard duality to kind of judge. And I think you have to go with your gut and just say, all right, if we lose the team fight, what did I learn from that? What did we do wrong there? And then you take that information going further into your games rather than just sitting there and saying, oh man, well, Malfurion stepped too far forward, so it's your fault and blah, blah, blah. Like, that doesn't fix anything. Like,
that's a good point.
Yeah.
For a long time, we acknowledged don't fight in corridors because ETC existed.
Sure. Yeah.
But now that he's disappeared from the planet,
I think there's a lot of
confusion as to which team wins in what area of the map. Like, oh, this is a good comp in open areas.
Right.
Why? Like, we don't know how Blaze tanks or how the Hogger Sonya frontline is supposed to work. And like, yeah, that's good in a choke, but why? Well, it's because slam build, because the terrain blind, like the factors are not as binary as Tyrael lands a holy ground.
Yeah, and we've talked about Valkyrie, we've talked about the strengths of Chromie and all of these other things too. So there's all these other factors that are choke versus wide area kind of affecting, right? And I mean, you're just describing a more interesting metagame to me.
That's true.
Just to reel things back though to what you're saying about, you know, the back and forth between the quick match meta or mental choices that people are making or just choices in game. At the end of the day, if you are sitting there and you're unsure of what you're doing, just remember it's quick match. That's the place to learn and grow and make mistakes. And if you don't understand your mistake, there's this wonderful thing in the game. It's not DLC. You don't have to pay for it. There's a replay system. You can go back and watch your VOD and see what happened wrong. You can slow things down and say, ooh, I was 5 feet away from my team, there's no way Morales could have healed me, and I stepped into the ETC mosh pit or whatever like that. Like, there's so much tools in the game to learn from, and I don't feel like you should take quick match as this, albeit like I have to win or, you know, it's everything. Like, quick match is a great place to learn and fail. If you really want to try hard, go to a place where you actually draft, unranked or ranked. I think quick match is just, people take it so serious because they're afraid of the actual ranked mode, so they treat this like their rank mode, and at the end of the day, it's a mode to learn, in my opinion. Much even like more ARAMs. Bizarre
when we get to ARAM, yeah.
Yeah, even more like ARAMs. Like Garrett was saying earlier, that was a great place to learn virulent reaction from Stukov. regardless of win or lose, you're still going to be able to learn through that game. And I think that's a big, big factor with those random modes.
There's a lot to be said. Like you said, when people are like, go back to AI, and you're like, that's not really that helpful. There's so much to be learned just by playing against real people controlling your opponents.
Also, fun fact, if you didn't know this, you can leash and play with the AI. If you've played against them enough, you can easily play around how they leash and bound and everything. Like, humans don't let you do certain things that AI lets you just get away with. Like, there's games where I'm like, yeah, I should have died there. But you don't get punished in AI like you do in Quick Match. And that's the reason I go to Quick Match, because I want to fail and learn why the build I'm utilizing isn't working and how it can work. That's just my PSA. That's all.
Well put. But we're clearly going to disagree with you, as the podcast has multiple times said.
Good.
You should probably get on board for the wrong thing than be alone doing the right thing. Like, we, Kyle, you and I have clearly made our thoughts known on that subject.
Yes.
On that debate. So, anyways, legitimately, I got such a giggle out of this email. And if the angry individual is listening, clearly you've listened before. I'm not sure why you would still be listening. You clearly don't like us. You're right. I can't do math, but also, what the hell, man? That was hilarious. Anyways, keep them coming. IGNcast@gmail.com. This is, by the way, not an invitation to make me aware of every horrible thing someone says about me on the internet. I don't need that in my life, but this particular one was extremely entertaining. So yeah, itncast@gmail.com, or just drop us a message right there in the Patreon Discord or on Patreon. And that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. So we want to thank you again, patrons. Speaking of which, if you like this show, even if you don't, if you think we fake real-time conversation, we will stop faking it if you go to patreon.com/ITN right now and pay us. So go do that.
The real conversation goal.
We also want a huge thanks to our Patreon producers, Declan H, Cheesy Bob, Chris K, and Sean B. If you want to become an Into the Nexus producer, check out patreon.com/ITN. You can catch us live Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time over at twitch.tv/amovetv. You can follow the show on Twitter @ITNcast. We'll let you know when we're going live. If we have a schedule change, that's a great place to find out. And other than that, I'm going to throw it to our lovely, lovely guest, Bahamut. If folks are unaware of where they can find you, which, by the way, if they got to the end of this and they're like, oh, I didn't know I could see him on CCL, I would be a little alarmed. But if folks are unaware of where they can find you in your wonderful Heroes coverage, where can everybody see you, Bahamut?
Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube, Bahamut Gaming. Just type that into Google, and those are the three places. I cast pretty much at this point. I am playing once a day on Tuesdays, and then I cast pretty much Wednesday through Sunday, since CCL starts this weekend with our Icebreaker tournament.
Sick. Chatroom wants to know if you have an OnlyFans.
No, I have an OnlyFriends, where basically we just DM each other, telling each other that we like, you look good in that photo, you gas each other up a little bit, that's all.
Okay. So appropriate compliments, because they're
exactly
friends.
We are PG-13. We're a wholesome stream.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That's like Kyle and I's relationship. Sometimes I still tell him his butt looks good. So
see, you know what? Sometimes you need your friend to tell you your butt looks good.
You do.
That's true.
Your skeleton behind you is telling you your butt looks good.
See?
Yeah. The video version, audio.
Exactly. Yeah.
You'll figure it out. Kyle Ferguson, what about you, bud?
You can find me over at KyleFerguson.com, playing Heroes over at twitch.tv/KyleFerguson. But of course, it's the D&D season. The Dungeons & Dragons is back in a big way. Season 2 of There Will Be Dungeons starts this weekend with Snake Island. But also check out DM Gives Inspiration, the 15-minute podcast that'll make you a better DM with weekly topics. And we're currently in Season 8 of that show. So check that out over at KyleFerguson.com.
My hometown in Florida, there's like an island we could swim to at one of the beaches that was called Snake Island.
There we go.
Yeah, it's straight up called Snake Island, which, by the way, so much more boring than I'm sure whatever you have planned for your D&D campaign.
A bit more mythical where we're off to.
I would assume
I'm assuming it's going to be full of gnomes and golems, right?
Yeah, that's Snake Island? The general. Yeah, okay, it's cool. Like a Greenland, Iceland sort of thing. It's just no snakes at all.
Please, honest to God, please do that.
What is the opposite of a snake? Do we have a canonical opposite? Bats?
No, that's flying mammal. Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah.
You really jumped on that.
Yeah, I want to go with that just because it was so quick.
I realized we definitely paused and then selected our option because this is actually a turn-based podcast. But
yeah,
but everyone hearing this after the fact thought that that was the fastest, snappiest answer ever. Anyways, folks, you can find me at GarrettArt on Twitter, and this podcast and every single other one that I produce can be found at amove.tv. Check out the Angry Chicken for Hearthstone. Everything's there. AMOVE.TV. Go check it out. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Good luck in your games this weekend. Get CCL's back. Get something delicious. Treat it like you would the Super Bowl. Get some wings or
pizza.
Or impossible meat if, you know, meat isn't your thing. You do you. The world is your junk food cornucopia. That's going to do it for this. And thank you so much for listening. Until next time, good luck and have fun.
Take care.